Hey, you're listening to Sordid Cinema. This week, we've got a full dance card to help us talk about Logan, James Mangold's Western slash dystopian exploration of the Wolverine character, played by Hugh Jackman. We are here to talk about genre and whether or not children should be allowed to be in movies.
We bring you this special radio television broadcast in order to give you the very latest information on an amazing phenomenon. Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen, I think something is happening.
Good evening. I hope you'll excuse me if I appear a trifle excited.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs.
Whatever appears emerges as raw experience for those who watch it.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight.
Hello and welcome to Sordid Cinema. My name is Simon Howell. I'm joined by Mr. Ricky D.
What's up, Simon?
We're also joined by Patrick Murphy.
Hey, everybody.
And of Sordid Cinema slash Goomba Stomp and Graphic Policy, we've got Mr. Logan Dalton.
Hey, guys. I'm only on this podcast because of my name.
Yeah, that's really... it's got nothing to do with any merit that you have as a person.
Yeah, pretty much. Just my name and...
Logan's not in any way an encyclopedia of comic book knowledge. Not in any way.
Now, Logan, actually, I got a question for you before we get into the review.
Yeah, sure.
Did your parents name you Logan after the comic book character?
They didn't, actually. My dad was more of an Avengers Justice League guy, but I at a comic conventions, I met both the co-creators of Wolverine, and I lied to them both times that my parents named me after. and actually, the artist who first drew him, Herb Trimpe, that was his last convention before his death. So I was a little sad that I like lied to this like old like comics guy before he died. It was kind of sad. Just like I met him, he's super cool. He's like I didn't know Wolverine would ever be this cool. He's just some guy like made up for the Hulk and yeah. And then he like died like that weekend. It was kind of sad.
Is he Canadian?
I didn't know. I think they were actually trying to get into the Canadian market, but I think both his creators are American.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't. Very few Canadians have written Wolverine. Sadly.
Well, I have a lot of questions for you.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
About the movie. We'll get to it.
Okay.
All right. So yeah. Yes, the movie of the day is Logan. We'll be getting to that shortly. First, is there anything else we need to mention that is non-Logan related?
If you're a new listener, you can listen to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and of course, over on our website, GoombaStomp.com and or SordidCinema.com. Give us a rating on iTunes if you like the show. Help support our site. Share the post and the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, anywhere. And I think that's about it. Actually, Patrick wrote a really, really, really good review of Logan, which you can find over at Sordid Cinema. So I highly recommend it because I'll be honest, guys, I actually read a few reviews before recording this podcast and I could not find a good review anywhere except for Patrick so far.
Hey, I'll take that. So you finally read it. That's good.
Yeah.
I know you didn't want to because you wanted to avoid all spoilers. I don't think I put any spoilers in there, right?
No, but I like to go into a movie cold, so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that's as good a setup as we're going to get. So let's hear a clip from James Mangold's Logan.
We got ourselves an X-Men fan. Maybe a quarter of it happened, and not like this. In the real world, people die.
Logan.
I don't want to talk about it.
Logan.
Just stop.
Be careful. I need the girl.
What girl?
Go get her. No. No.
Holy fuck.
And we're down. Oh, oh,
oh, oh. We're down. Oh. She's like you. Very much like you.
And we're down.
I am not whatever it is you think I am.
She needs our help.
Someone will come along.
Someone has come along.
Oh, baby.
The
This is what life looks like. People who love each other. A home. You should take a moment. Feel it. You still have time. Two days on the road, only one meal and hardly any sleep. She's 11, I'm fucking 90.
That was a clip from Logan, directed by James Mangold, written by Mangold with Scott Frank and Michael Green. And this, of course, is the supposed final cinematic outing for the Wolverine character as played by Hugh Jackman. Also, theoretically, the final cinematic outing for Patrick Stewart's Professor X or Charles Xavier. And it's a dystopian Western action film, among other things. And I mean, does anyone want to sort of attempt a plot summary here?
Well, it takes place in 2029 in the future. It seems all mutants have been extinct. Well, sort of like Children of Men, right? And I guess that's about it. Wolverine sort of retired. He's a limousine driver, and Professor X is going senile.
Yes, in this film, Xavier is, I believe, 90 or 91, and appears to be losing his marbles. So yes, it is the gritty Wolverine movie that people have long demanded. It is extremely R-rated for reasons I'm sure we will get to. Logan, as our guest of honor, I thought you might want to kick us off. I mean, this is now, what, the ninth movie or something that Wolverine's appeared in. Is this one different in an actually useful or interesting way?
Definitely. Because I think, yeah, like the X-Men movies where Wolverine's a star, he's just like kind of, I guess, only not, like, the first movie was great. He was a great entry point to the X-Men universe. But like the recent movies, it's just been him like being snarky and just kind of there, and Hugh Jackman just eating at the scenery. But this one, I feel like he really kind of embodied the pain, and like basically he just wanted to die this entire movie. And I also like that they went for the stripped down like road trip character driven movie instead of like the big CGI fest that was like X-Men Apocalypse. So that was really refreshing. I like these characters are iconic and are archetypical enough that you don't have to like add all the extra bells and whistles. You can just, you know, enjoy like the characters. And yeah, and I also was really excited to see X-23. Big fan of hers. And yeah, I definitely think that this is probably one of the, if not the best X-Men movie. It's like, yeah, but except that like, I don't know if like other studios should try to like rip off or try to make movies like Logan, because I mean, it's kind of lightning in a bottle with like Hugh Jackman. At the end of, we like know Hugh Jackman so well, and if they tried to like do this with like, I don't know, Iron Man or something, like it would.
Now, Patrick, I seem to recall you're also a fan of this film.
Yeah, I finally get to be a fan of a film on this show. I really liked this movie quite a lot. This is one of the best Marvel movies I've seen for reasons that are different. You know, I've liked some of the bigger ones. I really, really liked Captain America Winter Soldier. I thought that was a really, really outstanding version of the big superhero movie. This was just this is just kind of a weird Western / superhero movie hybrid. And I loved the small take. I think refreshing is going to be a word that we could use endlessly on this podcast just for how they approached a superhero movie this time around. But yeah, I love that it was small, and I love that the action was really, really physical as opposed to CGI based. Like, that was just, some of the action scenes in this really, really literally had me on the edge of my seat in the theater. Despite a baby crying almost the entire time, it Wow. still could not take away from this movie.
Babies, history's greatest monsters. now, Ricky, right before we started recording this podcast, we were talking about James Mangold's filmography, and you asked if he did Copland. So I know that you've been a fan of his for a long time, and I know you're also a big comics person. So how did you feel about all this?
He's a fantastic director. I love Copland. It's one of my favorite movies starring Sylvester Stallone. If you haven't seen it, watch it. I think it's still his best movie. I also really like 310 to Yuma. He's a great director. I'm not as crazy about this movie as Logan and Patrick, but I do really like it. It's just not one of my favorite comic book movies. What I do really, really love about the movie, though, first and foremost, is the relationship between Hugh Jackman's character and Patrick Stewart's character. But overall, what I like most about the movie is that it feels like a family film. And I do not mean it's a family movie, so please do not take your kids to go see the movie, because it's really annoying when they don't stop talking and you're trying to watch this like serious R-rated film. But anyhow, I do like the relationship between Wolverine and X-23 and Wolverine and Professor X and Professor X and X-23. Like, I like the chemistry between these actors. I love the performances across the board. That, I think, was the most interesting thing about the film. Like, when I think of iconic moments in X-Men movies, I'm going to think of Wolverine carrying Professor X upstairs and putting him to bed, the way he cares for him. I think that anyone that has a parent who's aging and going senile or that's sick can really relate to that specific relationship and that part of the story. So I think that's really interesting. I really appreciated that element of the screenplay. As far as X-Men movies go, X2 is still by far my favorite. I think for when that movie came out and what it did for its time, I think it did a lot, and I think it did it great. I think Bryan Singer did a fantastic job. It's completely two different types of movies in terms of style and tone and look, et cetera, et cetera. But my favorite thing about the original X-Men movies was the relationship between Anna Paquin's Rogue and Hugh Jackman's Wolverine. And so here we are 17 years later, 10 movies later, and we get this relationship in which Hugh Jackman's Wolverine has this bond with this younger girl played by X-23. And I thought that was like sort of like fascinating. There's just something about Hugh Jackman and watching him work alongside of these kids. Like, it just works for whatever reason. And I think with a different actor, it might not have worked as well. So I do like, once again, the idea of having like this family unit and really focusing on the family. In terms of it being a Western, I'll talk about that a little later on. In terms of it being a road movie, I totally agree with you, Logan. I love the fact that it is a road movie. It kind of feels like Beyond the Thunderdome or Terminator or any of these post-apocalyptic road movies we've seen in the past. So there's a lot I want to say, but overall, I think it's a great movie, just not one of my favorites in terms of like Marvel movies.
Yeah, sorry guys, this movie blows and I feel very strongly about this. and I will plead my case as to why, and I'll try not to be too annoying about it. I think my main, if I had to like sum up my main issue, it would be that this movie tries to do so many things and it half-asses all of them. It tries to be a Western, and like it really underlines that point by having the characters like literally sit down and watch Shane for 2 whole minutes and then quote it later, just so that you understand that it's trying to be a Western. It's trying to be this character piece that's quite intimate, but then it also lasts for fucking ever. It's trying to be this like stripped down, sort of more less CGI intensive action film, and then it just ends up using a whole lot of CGI. It's trying to be this movie that's independent of and completely sort of tonally separate from the other X-Men movies, but then it features plot elements that are dependent on those movies and that directly call back to those movies, so that's out. I think most importantly for me, though, it centers on sort of one of the least interesting character tropes there possibly is, of the reluctant hero who has seen it all and doesn't want to, is getting roped in for one last adventure and just wants to hang his hat and head into the sunset or whatever, or in this case, die. And I don't know, I don't think that that's a more interesting trope just because it's being expressed by a comic book character. And like, as fun as Hugh Jackman can be to watch, and as much as you get the sense that that they're sort of unburdened by the rating, I found it to be a totally joyless, punishing experience. And the last thing I'll say is that for a movie that's at least partially about sort of the toll of violence and how it haunts you and sort of corrupts your life, this movie fucking loves violence.
You've said a lot, and I want to break this down because I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but I actually enjoyed the movie. So I guess the difference here is that I agree with your criticism, but I walked away enjoying the movie. But let's talk about the Western aspect of it.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. Okay, like if you're going to make a Western superhero movie, that's fantastic. Like, I always talk about how I want to see a Batman movie that's like a film noir, and it's about Bruce Wayne being a detective instead of like Batman pulling out like his like super like gun and Batmobile that's all pimped out, what have you, right? But so here they're trying to make a Western superhero movie, and at times it does work, but I wish to God they just wouldn't tell us about the concept. Like, do we need to have two specific scenes quoting the exact same dialogue from the movie Shane? I've seen the movie Shane. You know, Quentin Tarantino does this a lot. He's like one of the first people to include these like references to movies in his movies, in terms of like not just like the dialogue and the way the scene's constructed, but having movies play in the background. Like, look at True Romance, for example. But in a movie like True Romance, they go see Street Fighter at the cinema, right? But they're not seeing like Natural Born Killers or, I don't know, a movie that's similar to True Romance, right? So like in this movie, I was like, God, okay, I get it. Like, I see the similarities, especially to Unforgiven, which Unforgiven basically feels like a remake of Shane, but in terms of like comparing it to Westerns, it's so much like Unforgiven, like so much. Like every character, every plot beat, every like major like sequence in this film, it, like just go watch Unforgiven. You could do a nice video essay and put it on YouTube and get like 20,000 views, right? But I do still like elements of it. Like for example, this is where I'm conflicted. I don't know how you guys feel about this, and chime in, but the farmhouse sequence I thought was like the highlight of the movie.
Yeah,
because of the way it's constructed. I love the action sequences. I love the fact that it didn't seem to rely on CGI. I love meeting like these new characters who actually are nice people. Like, it's funny because 5 minutes before we get that scene, I was like thinking in my head, I'm like, why is it that they never meet just nice people? Everyone in this world is terrible. And 5 minutes later, they actually get to meet this nice family. But the thing is, it still felt like an artificial construct. It kind of still missed its mark because it felt like it was put into the movie specifically to, I don't know, I don't know how to explain this. Like, it just felt
like filler.
It felt sort of false. Like, I understood what they were trying to go for, but it still felt false. It was like those characters, and Patrick or Logan, chime in after this, that family, like, I kind of felt like I never really, like, I knew exactly what was going to happen to this family, and I never really cared. And I don't know if it's because the characters are just like throwaway characters that are put there for a specific reason to move the plot forward or establish a relationship between Logan and Professor X, but it's no different than the mindless villains whose names we don't know that get killed throughout the whole entire film, and we just don't care about them. And it's just about making these action sequences that look cool because there's a girl with claws.
Well, I think that whole sequence was thrown in there to illustrate how a normal family operates. And for everything leading up to that, you were seeing a dysfunctional family, because really that's what Wolverine had with Caliban and Professor X. You know, like, Caliban was his wife or partner, I guess you would say, but they had a very spousal relationship, right? And it was completely dysfunctional. It was just, you know, and Patrick Stewart, I think he alludes to that like, this is what family is. This is what feels nice. You know, this is the nicest night I've ever spent, or something like that. But it's also very Western. That whole sort of happenstance where you come across a family in need, and this felt very much to me like a homestead, and there were some evil cattle ranchers that were, you know, trying to drive these people off their land essentially by cutting off their water, which is also another Western thing, like, we're cutting off your water. I loved that. See, I really, really like Westerns, and yes, this movie did go a little bit overboard with the Shane references. Like, there's no question about that. We didn't need two. One was kind of cute. Two was going a little bit overboard. I did not like the quote at the end. I thought that was really stupid that they
quoted. Oh, it was corny.
Yeah, it was super corny. But I really, really do like the Western aspects. And my favorite part of this movie is the middle. It's starting when X-23 kind of shows up at Logan and Caliban and Professor X place, this old smelting factory somewhere in Texas, I believe. I love the action scene that starts there. And it kind of feels like a showdown at high noon where X-23 walks out. You know, Logan is sort of trying to keep things subdued at the time. And X-23 walks out into the dusty gravel like she's a outlaw getting ready to face off with, you know, these rogue cowboys or whatever, these, you know, the baddies. They're just, might as well have been men in black hats. You know, they're all wearing black clothes. And that whole, the way that action scene builds, like, I'm going to remember this action scene as one of the best action scenes I've seen in at least a decade, just because of how it was built, how it starts out so small. It gets very physical, turns into a car chase. There's a train, which again seemed, it just conjured up imagery of Westerns for me. I love that. And then goes into this sort of meandering portion, which is very, like you say, very much like Unforgiven, where they're just sort of wandering around and they're discussing things. They're discussing life in general. And I liked that. It was that whole middle of the movie for me. The whole second act is super, super solid for me. The third act, it kind of, you know, crumbles a little bit in my mind. I didn't necessarily think that they pulled everything off in the end, but it had built up so much goodwill with me throughout that I was willing to forgive any of the shortcomings in the end.
But the third act felt like a typical X-Men movie where we have all of these kids with mutant powers that you don't know, you don't care about, and a lot of CGI and a lot of action that goes on for far too long. But yeah, the middle act is by far the best portion of this film. But it's like Simon says, it does feel like the director was, I don't know, like it was like he was inspired to make this gritty Western superhero movie. And maybe it's because of studio interference, or maybe he just got lost in his vision. But then all of a sudden he's making like a typical Bryan Singer X-Men movie, which is sort of disappointing.
Yeah, I really, okay, so a lot of people are saying like this movie is based on the Old Man Logan like comic book, which is basically Wolverine and Hawkeye going on a road trip. It's very much like a Western, and that second act kind of reminded me of it the most. But it was more like stripped down in character because Old Man Logan is a Mark Miller book. So it's like there's no subtlety at all. It's a guy who did Kick-Ass and like Kingsman. So, but this was more like, I guess I really like that it just took its time in the road trip part. Because like a lot of these like movies will kind of just like, I don't know, like X and Apocalypse, for example, will just go in and throw in tons and tons of characters and tons of like things going on. But this movie is just like taking its you know, good old time and kind of getting you to like the characters and their relationships, and then, you know, throwing in the action. And I actually was a kind of a fan of the third act because it's kind of like a new rebirth for the X-Men. And I mean, you know, maybe, you know, it's setting up a sequel a little too shamelessly and we don't really know these kids, but I felt like the kids at the end were like the kids who, you know, grew up with Wolverine, and like, especially the scene where the kid had the action figure, like, that was me, you know, growing up, and like the kids who, you know, grew up with these movies.
I read an interesting article about, well, actually, it wasn't actually a good article, but it did make sort of an interesting point in that they were talking about how this movie was trying to address this theme of like doubles, whereas like Wolverine has X-23, which is essentially a clone of him, be it his daughter, and then you have X-24, which is a clone of Wolverine, younger, stronger, more. And then you also have the idea of like throwing in the comic book into the movie, which reappears throughout the entire film. And then he's reading this comic book, and the story in the actual comic book within the movie sort of parallels their trip to this sort of like Eden, like wherever they're heading to Canada, right? Which, by the way, Wolverine's from Canada. So wouldn't it just make sense for him to take everyone to Canada? Like, why is he so opposed to this? But anyhow.
Yeah, they should. I thought they're going to mention like he's coming home kind of thing. But also, yeah. I mean, that's where also where he became, you know, Wolverine. So he also has like bad feels about that. So,
right. So, yeah, we should talk about that. So is Canada really a safe haven for these kids? And I think that this idea of like doubles, which we see a lot in a lot of superhero movies, especially Christopher Nolan films, that would have been interesting. But I didn't think that did much with it. And I wish we had a bit more. But this movie really is a long chase movie. And I love chase movies and I love road movies. But man, like when you get to that third act, I just thought it fell apart.
And like, it doesn't help that they like the main X-23 is played by Daphne Keene. She's great, but man, the other kids in this movie are rough. They are not good actors.
Yeah, she's so bad.
They're not in there that much, thankfully. She's amazing, though. I mean, I was glued to her. I feel like this was, you know, Natalie Portman in The Professionals caliber. Right there. I think she's got some big things ahead of her. She stood out to me more than anybody else. Maybe her and Patrick Stewart especially turned in some great performances.
Mm-hmm. Did no one else feel, though, that like having Patrick Stewart as Professor X like cussing left and right, and this ties in with the violence as well, but it really feels like, you know, they overcompensated for the cleanliness of the other movies by just like leaning in on the crass elements like a little bit.
I like that he told Logan to fuck off, because like he did that in Days of Future Past and it was pretty awesome. But yeah, I'm like, he's a little too, like, it's just, I don't know, I guess because I'm used to him, like, you know, playing Shakespeare and, like, that kind of stuff, but
I think they did a good job with making him be kind of cantankerous, the senility thing, you know, the sickness thing, the bitterness and anger that can set in with that, you know, even though he was very even keeled for the most part and still very compassionate. You know, that's what happened, or at least I've seen that before. I've gone through that in sort of a father-son relationship thing, and it could get very testy, let's put it that way. So for me, that kind of rang true as to how they were setting his character up as having this sickness and everything.
Yeah, also giving, like, the most powerful telepath in the world, like, a degenerative brain disorder was, like, a really cool idea to take the mutants off the board. And I really like the past few X-Men movies and even, like, Legion. And how it shows, like, how, like, messed up, like, if you actually had telepathy, how messed up it would be. And you would, like, definitely be mentally unhinged instead of just, like, walking around, like,
right. Doing well, mind tricks and stuff. On Legion, it seems to be more about, like, what if someone with super, like, what if someone who was mentally ill also happened to have superpowers, or what if someone who had superpowers also happened to be mentally ill? This is a little bit different, but yes, we are starting to see people toy with these ideas to varying degrees of success. I don't seem to like Legion as much as anyone else does. I'm noticing a theme here, but yeah, another thing that I think really bothered me about this movie, and another thing that it really half-asses, is the whole dystopian aspect. It nicks the Children of Men trick of sort of trying to world build in the background when we get these commercials or I forget exactly what they are, where you see the cornfields and that and it's supposed to be, you know, you're supposed to be getting a sense of how industry is progressing, but then it ends up actually being a plot point when the Richard E. Grant character, I'm always happy to see Richard E. Grant, even though his character in this movie was useless, he ends up talking about how they've essentially, like, poisoned the food supply through corn syrup to make sure there are no more mutants. And it's like, oh, that's it's so there's also this dystopian post-industrial conspiracy aspect, which is like, what is this movie doing?
Yeah, but I mean, it is a comic book movie, and maybe that's, like, a poor excuse, but, you know, if you want to pick at the plot, we can do it all day long. I mean, look, this is the type of movie where they have a video recording which explains the plot of the movie.
Oh yeah, you know, I love that the Elizabeth Rodriguez character, she's somehow managed to make, like, a perfectly assembled documentary on her phone, complete with voiceover.
Which you can do nowadays. I mean, people do that kind of stuff. I think the plot of this, look, there's a lot of context I did not understand. I didn't see X-Men Apocalypse. So I don't know if the Westchester incident happened in that movie. No, I don't, that seemed to be very important.
The whole Westchester incident, it's the callback to Old Man Logan, because in Old Man Logan, Wolverine is, like, under mind control and kills everyone. But in this one, you know, it's Xavier doing, like, mental craziness. So
So in the comic book, Wolverine is under mind control by who?
Oh, well, in Old Man Logan has a bunch of, like, characters that, you know, Fox doesn't have access to.
Okay.
So basically in Old Man Logan, all the villains kind of finally get their act together, team up, kill all the, like, most of the Marvel heroes. And their big, like, kind of stroke is mind-controlling Wolverine, and he kills all the X-Men.
Okay, so let me ask you a question, Patrick. You love Westerns. I'm sure you love Unforgiven, right?
Love Unforgiven. Love Westerns.
This movie is very similar to Unforgiven. Can you not deny that?
We were talking about the X-Men comics being this, it just reminded me of Dime Store Novels and kind of the writer in Unforgiven, you know, writing about these actual events, but doing it in a very sensationalized way. That to me is what these comic books represented.
But here's my question. In Unforgiven, right, which is a great movie, if you haven't seen it, watch the movie. Clint Eastwood's character, Bill. There's two Bills in that movie, right? There's Bill
there's
Money
Bill, and then there's
and
Little
Bill.
Money.
Right,
okay. Will. Technically, but
Will, yeah. So in that movie, do you remember the scene where there's a huge fight where he comes to save the day and he beats the crap out of him in front of all the townspeople?
Mm-hmm.
And then
where Little Bill does, or
yeah, and you get the expression of the people watching, and they're supposed to be saving, like, this, like, town from, like, this baddie, and everyone's in horror watching this the event unfold. Like, the point I'm trying to make here is in that movie, Unforgiven, it actually shows that even when no matter who it is, the good guy or the bad guy, violence is violence, and it has more of an impact on the audience, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing about Wolverine, and maybe it's just because I'm a huge fan of horror films, but I cannot help but think that they sort of missed out on a golden opportunity to actually make this film more horrific, stay away from that whole third act completely, because that was just, like, in my opinion, the worst part of the movie. But, like, they could have made a real horrifying, like, Western where the... Like, when people die, it actually means a lot more. It impacts us, the audience. Like, when Professor X dies, I'm sure there's a few people in the theater that started crying. I mean, it did get dusty at the end when, you know, Wolverine dies. This is full-out spoilers, by the way. But, like, I felt like the director really missed a golden opportunity to deliver a movie that could have really had more of a powerful punch, emotionally, I think. And, like, that's what a lot of these Westerns, or the best of the Westerns, do. Like, they find these ways to show that the heroes aren't really always heroes. They're just as bad, even if they're sort of like a victim to it, but just as bad as some of the bad guys, you know. Right. Be it if he's wearing the white hat or the black hat, he's still sort of like a guy who's going around killing people. And Wolverine, Hugh Jackman's character, sort of like dances around this topic, you know, like, you know, throughout the whole entire film. I mean, he knows that, like, I mean, as soon as they arrive at the farmhouse, it's like, I think he knew deep down inside that these people were going to die. Yet he decides to stay, whatever. But, like, it's like he says in the movie, everyone he cares about actually ends up dying.
Yeah, and Patrick Stewart kind of made him stay there. Remember, he wanted to leave right away, and Stewart just insisted that they stay the night because he wanted to show Logan what a family is like. I feel like, I see your point with the violence, and you're right. They certainly didn't go the Unforgiven route, which was to show, I mean, that movie had different themes. I feel like this was more along the lines of, you know, the sort of confused tones about violence that movies like Shane or The Searchers had, where, yes, they're trying to show a person who is deep down, there's the darkness inside him, and that violence is a part of that, but then they still sensationalize the violence. Like, when John Wayne shoots somebody in The Searchers, it's still awesome, right? But you're not supposed to think that for his character, because he is a guy that's rotting from the inside in many ways. And he doesn't belong in civilized society, just like Logan doesn't belong anywhere in this world. So I see your point. Like, there are a lot of parallels to Unforgiven, probably more so than any other Western. But you're right. They don't approach the violence in the same way. They still approach the violence like it is a, you know, big action spectacular, even though I think the action scenes are much more focused and physical, like I say, as opposed to, you know, CGI.
At the farmhouse, I think they did a really good job. I thought that was probably like the scariest, I'm gonna use the word scariest for lack of better words, moment of the movie. But throughout the whole entire film, like, it's like Simon says, tonally it does like fall apart. But I don't know, like, man, I like this movie. Like, I'm honest to God, I like the movie. It's just one of those movies, like, there's this reoccurring thing I notice in movies over the past, like, 10 years, where you have this fantastic film, which you can almost call a near masterpiece, but it falls apart in the third act. Like, strange example, but one of my favorite Pixar films is WALL-E. And I think that movie is, like, a near masterpiece in the first and second act. But then you get to the third act, and it feels like a completely different film tonally, and, like, it's not bad, the third act, but it's just like, it's always disappointing. And so I walk away with that third act fresh in my memory and sort of like forget about all the greatness that came prior to it. In terms of like the second act, the farmhouse sequence, you pointed out the earlier sequence in which X-23 first shows her claws and starts like attacking everyone. And it's well choreographed. It's an exciting, interesting like action sequence, no doubt. Like, it reminds me of something like on the lines of like John Wick action, right? But the farmhouse to me was like the best photograph. Like, I love the cinematography. I love like the lighting, the way it was dark. And it felt like a horror film. Like, it felt like a horror film, but that just so happened to feature these characters. But I think the second scene, which stands out the most, like the first scene being when Hugh Jackman carries Patrick Stewart up the stairs to put him to bed. The second scene that stood out the most was when Professor X is assassinated, so to speak. And Wolverine goes to get Professor X, and he tries to make him understand that it wasn't him because he thinks it was him. Again, playing on that theme of like doubles, like he knew he was going to die, but he had to make sure that he understood that he wasn't the person that actually killed him and put his claws into his heart. Right. That was the scene where I almost teared up. Like, that was to me like the highlight of the movie.
I mean, when you're talking about the structural issues, to me, it seems like a classic case of too many cooks and too many masters. Where, you know, again, they want to have this liberated film that, you know, breaks free of, you know, other superhero movies and embraces, you know, classic film genres. But A, it chooses to pick all of the genres instead of, you know, one or two. And B, when I saw that Scott Frank was in the credits, I got kind of excited because, you know, he's written some incredible screenplays and he's written some really tight screenplays. I mean, Out of Sight, he wrote Out of Sight. He wrote Get Shorty. He wrote Minority Report. You know, he wrote a lot of great movies and also Marley and Me. And he wrote and directed The Lookout, which is a really great neo-noir with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, if you haven't seen it. But there are also two other people credited, including Mangold, and it feels like it got mangled by Mangold.
Well, there's also Michael Green, who writes a lot of the episodes for Gotham, which is a show I watch, but let's face it, it's not a good show. But he's also writing American Gods. I mean, I don't know, man. Like, I got excited too. Scott Frank's a great writer. But again, Simon, I do think this is a good movie. Like, it just seems that you downright hate this movie, which I find confusing.
Why?
I can understand you disliking the third act, but like, the first two acts don't really feel like a typical Marvel film or an X-Men movie.
Yeah,
like,
it doesn't
doing
make it
so
good.
That doesn't alone make it good. I mean, just being refreshing doesn't make
something good.
The bar's
really
like
real low.
A lot of the things that you think don't work, like the combination of genres and things like that, I think flowed really well. I thought Mangold handled it all really, really well for the most part. And I'll agree that the third act suffers a little bit, but it certainly didn't suffer enough in my eyes to like dismiss the rest of the movie. What I think the rest of the movie did very, very good. I like this movie a lot. I mean, I'm going to put it up there certainly in my top five Marvel movies. I just there's something about it that felt so focused and tight. I loved the editing of this, even though it runs long. For the first two thirds of it, I thought this movie was super tight, and they could have probably shortened up that last act a little bit and gotten things resolved quicker. They introduced a few too many new elements at the very end to sort of wrap it up. But for the rest of it, man, I was completely sold.
No, yo, if you want to make this movie shorter, cut out the whole casino sequence, which lasted like a half an hour.
That's
motion.
Like total product placement. Like,
oh my God.
Yes, I forgot about that.
Did we have to watch him walk up the hallway, wait for the elevator, go up the elevator, walk down the hallway,
and it had nothing
open
to do with the
door?
I did like the scene where like they were like looking at like the Western style clothes because it's like, oh, X-23 is gonna be a kid. Like, he's like, it's like shopping for his kid or something. But like, yeah, like the casino and showing out in the hotel. I'm like, okay, like maybe this is like a TV show, but like, man, like this movie needs to get moving. Like,
I was okay with that part. I thought it hit the beats well. I thought it was just sort of again just building. I thought Mangold handled that stuff really well, building to his next action scene, which is something you have to do whenever you make a superhero movie or any action movie. You're always building to the next action scene. I liked those elements and that, you know, that all worked really well for me.
Wait, the part
even the
where
casino stuff.
Hanging out of the casino for
was kind of the downtime.
Even a slow motion sequence?
Oh, it was fine, yeah. I didn't even notice. You know, honestly, I don't even remember there being slow motion in the movie.
I like that because it was a callback to Professor X, like, stopping all the people in the museum in X2. And
Patrick,
when he had his seizure. Oh, yeah. Oh, I thought that was great because it was so tense. Like, yes, part of you just wants it to be over. You want it to be over, but that's the beauty of it. It's just absolutely driving tension into your brain because you are crying out for this thing to finally be over.
Yes,
no,
I
liked how they... Yeah, I know. But that's kind of, look, either you like that or you don't. I like that because it made me feel uncomfortable the entire time. And that was a good thing. Like, I could actually rewatch that sequence right now and enjoy it for what it is.
You know who I really like in this movie? I like the chubby kid at the end. And I was actually kind of really mad at my audience because everybody was laughing when he was running. I'm like, what's so funny? Okay, we get it. He's chubby. And that's the way he runs. But that kid, I was like, he didn't talk. He was silent.
Yes.
He was perfect. He didn't have to deliver any bad dialogue. I'm like, I want to see a movie about that guy.
He got to carry the action figure. That was...
Yeah.
It was weird that they got the kid who could act to not talk. And then they got the kids who couldn't act to deliver dialogue.
Except for Daphne, she could deliver her dialogue.
No, I know, but then she finally talks, and it's in Spanish, and it's great. But you know, anyway, I mean, the I'm glad someone brought up the product placement, actually, because that was that actually really bothered me. And not only because product placement in movies is terrible and, you know, disruptive, but because it totally undercut the sort of post-apocalyptic atmosphere. Because, oh, like, everything is still pretty much just trucking along. Like, there's nothing really... It's not really post-apocalyptic. I mean dystopian atmosphere that's supposed to be really oppressive. But Coca-Cola and Ford are still here, so, like, how bad can it be?
Well,
it's like Minority Report. I mean, the product placement in Minority Report is insane. That's sort of a, you know, utopian dystopian society.
But it works in Minority Report, I think. And it doesn't here, maybe because we're not in an urban environment so much. And
yeah, that could be.
Man, I didn't even notice a product placement.
I think I noticed it because it's like Harrah's is like, when I think of Harrah's, I think of like flyover country, like freaking like Missouri and like southern Indiana. Like, it's just a casino chain. And I mean, I think maybe it did a good job of like establishing location. Like, we're in the middle of nowhere in the U.S. and this is all people do for fun kind of thing. Like,
yeah, I don't know, guys. It's not like it's not like Dennis Rodman's using a Coke machine to save his life, you know?
It was a little better than I don't know, like the typical plot product placement, but it was also like really kind of brought me out of the movie for like a second. Like,
I'm not really good with the geographic locations. Like, I'm not entirely sure how they traveled or were trying to travel to Canada, but wasn't there a faster way to get to Canada? It kind of seemed like they were like taking a long route. Because where
they
does
sort of word. There's
were,
a highway right? that runs straight from Texas up to Minnesota, where I live, and into Canada. It would basically take you pretty close to Winnipeg.
Right. It kind of felt like they were headed to Vancouver.
Yeah, but why would you want to go to Winnipeg?
Why would you
yeah,
want to go
exactly.
to Vancouver?
You wouldn't.
So it makes sense.
No.
It's not a plot.
No, point. it actually makes more sense if they go to Winnipeg, because who the hell is going to look for them in Winnipeg? Whereas Vancouver is like Vancouver. It's like this.
I don't think they were in Vancouver, because I mean, like,
no, yes. They never made it anywhere, actually.
I don't know, like, yeah.
We're not even entirely sure if they actually made it across the border, because the movie does end.
Yeah, I like to think all those kids got killed.
Oh, my God. Except for the chubby kid. He was awesome. He's the only one who survives.
Yeah, he can stay. If the quiet ones who went to the school for children who should not be seen or heard can live.
Yeah.
The all Charles right. Xavier School for Gifted Children Who Should Not Be Seen or Heard.
Anyhow, I really don't know what else to say about this movie. I really did enjoy it, honest to God. I kind of wish the third act had the same spirit and tone as the first two acts. It's one of the better X-Men movies. I still think X2 is my favorite of the bunch, although there are like 11 in total, I think.
Where do you think it ranks in the Wolverine movies?
Oh, well, when you talk about Wolverine, Wolverine Goes to Japan, whatever it's
there's
called.
Wolverine, and then there's The Wolverine. And then there's
the Wolverine
Logan.
Had some potential, but like its third act was the worst.
That was another James Mangold effort, by the way. Like, yeah, I think he redeemed himself with this one, because the Wolverine was just sort of okay.
Yeah, I mean, I really love that bullet train sequence. It showed he could do action, but yeah, the ending was just like, oh, we're going to be like the Marvel Cinematic Universe and fight a thing in armor that no one cares about for 20 minutes and then call it a movie.
I'm mostly confused, Patrick, that you found the gun-fu in John Wick boring, but you thought
yes.
that, but you thought the action in this movie was exciting. That's totally...
Simon, I'm so glad you brought that up. Yes, the action here is so much better than John Wick's and means so much more. It is so much
what?
More powerful than in John Wick. First of all, in John Wick, it's just mindless shooting people in the head, right? Which
looks mindless
cool.
stabbing people in the head.
No, it's not just mindless, because there's actual emotion behind the action in this movie. Whereas in John Wick, he
yeah,
might as well
there's
be
one
the
emotion.
Yeah, it's rage, though. It's hurt. You feel the pain in Wolverine as he stabs some guy through the brain.
Painful,
every
sad,
time.
And painful. He has the emotional depth of like Batman in the Lego movie.
And he, as a character, gets so much more beaten up and worn down than John Wick ever did. John Wick's like getting beaten up never actually affected him. He'd limp, and then he'd get into a fight with somebody, and he'd be totally flawless. Like, his body is just fine. Whereas Logan here... He is breaking down this entire movie, and he's getting weaker and weaker, and him going up against people, you can see it. It actually works. This action was just leagues above. It blows John Wick out of the water. John Wick was kind of cool. It had cool action. This was completely awesome action.
On a level of choreography and even filming, I don't think it's anywhere near.
Oh, it's just grittier. It was everything about it was better. The choreography was felt real and rough. It didn't feel so contrived. John Wick is like a ballet where everything, every movement is so precise, and it's stylized to be that way, and that's fine. Like, it looks cool. I'm not going to say that John Wick's action wasn't kind of cool in many respects, but it just sort of gets boring after a while because you keep seeing the same thing over and over again. But here, everything felt rough.
You guys are crazy. They're on par, man. They're just about equal. Like, it is different because here with Wolverine is more hand-to-hand combat because he only uses a gun once. Wolverine doesn't typically use guns. John Wick, he uses guns. But I think it's almost on the same level. I mean, Keanu Reeves' character is not a superhero per se. He still gets beaten down. Wolverine gets beaten down. Wolverine's also dying. Let's be fair. He's dying at the start of the film before he even gets to fight any of these guys. But I think they're both great action movies. My problem has nothing to do with the action or the characters or the acting or the performances or the cinematography. It's just the third act. Like, why can't they just make a bloody superhero movie that doesn't have to incorporate the whole entire like mutant universe and this huge plot of how they're going to destroy all mutants, etc., etc.? Why couldn't we just had a road movie with old man Logan and old man Patrick Stewart and X-23 just running away from whoever's chasing them or something?
Well, and if I could sum up my problems with this movie in like one idea, it's that it had no vision. It didn't feel like it had a coherent notion of what it wanted to be. Even if it wanted to be a patchwork, that's fine.
Yeah, I don't see it that way. But Logan, what do you think about this?
With the action or
yeah, fight
with the focus. How about with the?
Well, I think the focus was Hugh Jackman was like, dude, like these movies, like you guys have been using me in wrong way. I just want one. I want to go out like fighting just the hard R Wolverine that the fans have been, you know, looking for since that one scene in X2 where he kills all those soldiers, and also kind of like have a little bit of rebirth with X-23 for the future. And actually, I wrote an article for Graphic Policy about why I liked Logan. It's because like there's actual like most superhero movies, it's like trailers for the next ones. But like this is one of the few ones that like had a feeling of finality. Like his story's over. Like they'll probably recast him in like 5 years. But
well, they are. They already started the process to look for the next Wolverine, and Hugh Jackman's going to choose who's going to take over his mantle.
But like, I mean, but yeah, so probably end up in being like Iron Man 3 in that respect. Like,
Simon,
I kind of wish that like Robert Downey Jr. had just quit the role after Iron Man 3. That would have been awesome. Like, but I mean, you got to make money. So
you also look like you're going to have a really good time with that new Peter Parker.
Yeah. But so here's the thing. So moving forward, I guess to close off this discussion, do you prefer to have a movie like Logan where it's rated R, or would you prefer something more in the PG-13 lines of, say, what was the last Wolverine movie called? Wolverine Big in Japan?
The Wolverine.
Right, sure.
I mean, the thing is, like, there's R-rated and then there's this. Like, just because you have an R rating, it does not mean every character needs to get stabbed 28 times. It doesn't mean that we need to get like impalings in every possible body part. It doesn't mean every character should be dropping F-bombs, even though it's completely out of character for them. These days you can get away with so much with a PG-13 rating that I almost think that going for the R is counterproductive.
Yeah, I agree with you that like the R rating doesn't really mean anything to me. And just because there were brains splattering or whatever and the blood flying everywhere doesn't make the action scene any better. And F-bombs being dropped doesn't make Stewart's character better or anything like that. I didn't feel it was out of character for him to swear, but I just have a different perspective on that, I guess. But I do feel like this was a movie that had some focus and that just did want to tell a small story. And I found it refreshing that it didn't involve the entire world, you know, the stake, you know, the entire world here. It was just about characters. Ultimately, this movie, its focus was about just Logan. It was about just this small little core group of people. And I felt like everything that was happening around them didn't really matter all that much. It was just there to get these characters through the emotional journey that they were going through. That's why all that plot that they throw in there, it seemed extraneous, and it was. It didn't really matter, but it never felt like it mattered. It never felt like it needed to matter in order for this story to be told. Yeah, they could have cut some of it out, and maybe the movie would have been a little bit tighter, but I don't think it really distracted too much either. Like, they seemed to know what they wanted to do, and that was to make a road movie with Wolverine.
You know, the reason why I ask you guys, first of all, I don't care if it's rated R or PG. I just want a good movie. But I think, like, a lot of people think that the movie's making a lot of money because it's rated R, and I think that's not why. I think, just like Deadpool, the reason why this movie's making a lot of money is because, A, clearly it features a character who everybody knows about. At least if you read comic books, Deadpool, Wolverine, they're pretty huge, popular characters. But I think, honest to God, it has to do with the marketing. Like, Logan and Deadpool have some of the best marketing I've ever seen for movies. For example, the little 5-minute short that they screened before Logan, which featured Deadpool, which wasn't really a trailer or a teaser or an advertisement. It was just like a little short film. But Axe has a way to promote the upcoming Deadpool movie. I thought that was fantastic. The poster art, the music that they use in specific trailers, the way they cut the trailers, the way, I don't know, just everything about the marketing of these two movies, that's what makes it a huge success, I think. Because, like, even if you look at Iron Fist, right, most of the Netflix Marvel TV series have been super successful. Now, it's not out yet, but a lot of people seem to be giving it bad reviews. I guarantee you it's not going to be a success because no one's marketing this TV show properly. So I think the thing is that people have to realize that it's not necessarily because of an R rating. I think it has a lot to do with the marketing.
I would just like to say that Deadpool is lame, and I was really happy when no one in my theater laughed at the teaser.
Really?
Yeah. It was a packed house too.
Huh.
I got a question for you, Simon. Like, yeah. What comic book movie do you like? I'm sure you like some because there's quite a wide variety of them.
Ghost World.
Darkman's great. No,
well, that is an awesome movie. That's true.
I'm going to invalidate all opinions I've expressed in this podcast by saying that, and admittedly, I have not rewatched it, but I'm going to say that A, The Last Stand is actually okay.
Oh,
and interesting.
I agree with him. I actually
don't think there's a massive or really any quality difference between the first three X-Men movies.
But are you asking for superhero movies or comic book movies? There's tons of comic book movies that we can name.
I guess superhero movies would be more apt then. X2, the difference between X2 and The Last Stand, I think, is pretty stark to me. But so you don't totally.
Yeah, you're right, because The Last Stand had the decency to fucking kill Cyclops. I hate that guy. But you know what my favorite superhero movie is? It's Lucy. That's my favorite superhero movie.
Really?
Yeah,
Lucy's
love that
okay.
Movie.
It's kind of brainless, but it's okay.
No, it's like, not at all brainless. You're totally
it's
wrong.
It's entertaining trash, but it's good. It's good in that, you know, popcorn way, I guess.
Yeah, it is entertaining. That's something that Logan does not manage. and it's like 85 minutes long. It's like a perfect length.
Yeah, except it feels longer than Logan. When that I watched Lucy, that felt like a 3-hour movie. Just listening to some of the exposition in that was just...
I figured this out. The only way to please all three of us is to take the nameless kid in Logan, put him in a movie like John Wick, replace Keanu Reeves, and give him claws, and we would be happy.
That would be such a great movie. I love that kid. He could do his lightning, too. Like...
Oh, man.
Right. Bring about a new era of silent movies for superheroes.
Anyway,
they should try that. I mean, there have been silent issues of comics that have been like really, really good that are just action, just silent, just art and choreography. Like, they should try that. Like,
so like an experimental art house film where you just get a shot of Hugh Jackman's Wolverine sleeping all day for like 12 hours. Amazing.
Yeah, like Wavelength, but with Wolverine. Yeah. All right. I mean, this you're basically describing Legion is what you're describing right now.
I like Legion.
Legion. I just don't like Noah Hawley, man. I just really don't. But that's my problem. Anyway.
Oh, not even Fargo, huh? All right.
Fargo, it's got some fun performances and some fun ideas, but
yeah.
It's just a mishmash, and it makes me wish I was watching the Coens.
It's Coen Brothers light. There's no question.
Yeah.
Anyway. And he doesn't know how to end anything either. Speaking of, like, nobody knows how to end anything, like you said, Rick. Nobody knows how to end anything these days.
UFOs. There are UFOs now.
Yeah.
Anyway, the movie's called Logan. We seem to disagree, but that's okay, because no one's got any claws. to my knowledge. Oh, the last thing I wanted to mention is there was a really good article from John Semley in, I want to say, Salon, where he was talking about the history of Logan as Canadian and how I didn't think the new movie connected to that very well, but it was a good take on how on the history of sort of Canadian literature and film and how Logan fits into that, how Wolverine fits into that. It's a good read. I recommend it. And that's it for me. Do go to swordcinema.com for the latest in all good things. And as long as we're all here, I'm on Twitter at Hollow Minds. Ricky, you run Goomba Stomp Mag. That's our Twitter feed. Patrick, Logan, you on the Twitters?
Yeah, I love Twitter. I'm on there all the time. My Twitter handle is Midnighter Bay, and Bay is spelled B-A-E.
Yeah.
Right now, if you go my profile, my name is Old Man Logan, just for fun. So
nice.
Just to celebrate the movie. I'll probably change it soon, but yeah.
Twitter is so good right now. Patrick, you're not on Twitter, right? I'm
like
not imagining
barely
that.
barely on Twitter. I run the Twitter account for the NExpress Nintendo podcast, which is our another podcast that Rick and I are on that covers all things Nintendo on GoombaStomp.com. That is at NExpress Nintendo.
And can I just pimp out the Sword of Cinema Twitter handle? I actually run two Twitter accounts, which is kind of time consuming and a pain in the ass, but yeah.
That's funny that you have two Twitter accounts because you hate Twitter.
I hate Twitter.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks, guys, for a great talk. We'll talk to you next week.
Ada, Mr. Monson. You understand you're trespassing right now, right?
I have an easement with the previous owner of your property.
Previous being the operative word. Who's this?
Just a guy telling you to get back in your nice truck. Go play Okey Dickhead somewhere else.
Hey, Carl. It looks like Mr. Monson hires some muscle.
Looks that way.
He's a friend of mine.
Friend with a big mouth.
I hear that a lot.
And you probably hear this too.
More than I'd like.
And you know the drill. I'm gonna count to three, and you're gonna start walking away.
I got rights to this one.
One.
I have a lawyer now.
Two.
Three.
Yeah, right, boss.
You know the drill. Get out.
There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around? Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing, multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum, voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks.